Welcome back once again, culture members. This is episode 3 of your new podcast, The Culture is Money. I am your host, Jamal Vitos. On social media, some of you may know me as Leo Grand Prince, but whatever name that you know me by, I hope you would know that I am an advocate for financial literacy and a champion for financial freedom. I want to start this podcast off like I've done the last couple of weeks, thanking you guys for listening in. You've been giving me tons of feedback and insight of not only ways that I can improve the podcast to make it more enjoyable for you, but also you've been giving me information about topics you want to hear, questions that you would want me to dive into, or just general, you know, information that you would like me to gather to potentially bring up in the future podcast. I would like you to continue that method. All questions are welcome. If I don't know the information, as I said, in the coming weeks after I've established some topics and parameters of concepts that we're going to cover, if there are topics that I've been getting a lot of requests for, I am going to start bringing on subject matter experts who may know more in-depth details of topics that I may only know on a high level, so that we can get to the nuts and bolts of the details. Please continue to DM me because the DMs and questions I get are the source for my topics. I've been giving financial information based off both education and experience for the better part of, since social media has been around. I can remember my first social media being Instagram and Twitter back in maybe 2010. They may have been around longer than that, but that's when I jumped onto it. And a big part of my platform has always been social, financial literacy, and any information that I had and provided that I always wanted to share with people in a way to make their life better. And that has been the source for the last couple of weeks of topics, establishing my experience, as well as last week when we went over three different types of savings account, as well as how to manage money management skills and disciplines. This week's topics is going to cover something that I've gotten a lot of questions on as long as I've been talking about finance and investment and retirement, and that is 401ks, traditional IRAs, and Roth IRAs. I've gotten them specifically from millennials, people my age, who are in the corporate world and don't really know what they are or how they work. Some people are investing in 401ks and really don't even know what their investments hold or how it works or the benefits or what have you. So I wanted to spend some time on each one of these investment vehicles, talking about the benefits, the specific restrictions, if there are any, the minimum and maximums of certain withdrawals or the time that you can take, and what have you. So I'm going to start with 401k, since that is the most known by most people. Especially if you have a corporate job, or they tend to have 401ks, it's pretty routine with HR benefits and things of that matter. 401ks, to be simple, are an account designed for savings. 401ks were started back in 1986. They were meant to be an employer incentivized IRS approved account. They were supposed to offset retirees or former employees' burden from the Social Security Trust. As most of you know, Social Security was invented as part of the New Deal after the stock market crash of 1929. And FDR's New Deal, he wanted to make people in retirement, the elderly, not live in poverty, so they created the Social Security insurance. The problem is the trust fund was never designed to take on the weight and financial burden it has had to take on within the last 50 or 60 years. Back when it was first designed, people would retire and they would, not to get too morbid, they would pass away within the first 3 to 5 years of retirement. That's not happening anymore, because our medicine and understanding and treatments have gotten so advanced that people are retirement are retiring sometimes even before 65 because of health reason or disability, and living 30, 40 years off Social Security insurance when it was really never intended this way. So the 401k was designed to help people save outside of that so that they weren't completely dependent on the Social Security insurance. And as I said, the 401k is simply that, is an account designed to save. Couple of benefits for the 401k plan. Your contributions are pre-tax money. And what that means is the money that is that you personally contribute to your 401k plan is taken out even before Uncle Sam gets his cut. I know some people will be like, what is pre-cut? Does that mean before? That means after the federal and state get their cut and then I get my? No, this is before even the federal and state take out their percentage of your payroll or income every 2 weeks. Your contribution is taken from that. Couple of benefits of that is it lowers your tax liability at the end of the year. Let's say, for an example, you make $50,000 a year and you contribute $1,000 of that $50,000 to your 401k plan. The federal and state governments are only going to tax you based off the $49,000, not based off the $50,000 that you actually grossed. We'll get more into taxation as I go along about the benefits of each investment vehicle, but that's just a synopsis of that. It's also, there's a max amount of money that you can put into the 401k plan. As of 2020, the max that you can put in is $19,500. Each year or 2 years, that amount goes up, but that's the amount that you can get, that's the maximum amount that you can put in before you're tapped out. And I know some people are saying, what if I make, you know, enough that I can use multiple? We'll get into that later on. I'll talk about why I want you to use a combination of these and why it's beneficial of that. One of the key components and benefits of 401k plan is majority, not all, but majority of employers match your contribution. The general contribution max is about 6%. Let me give you an example. For me, my firm where I work offers a 401k plan. They offer up to 6% match. So for me, I contribute 11% to my 401k plan. And my thinking is, because the firm already matches me at 6%, I need to add an additional to get as much compound interest on that as possible. And what it means is I want to add as much extra capital at work as possible because I'm getting all of this benefits pre-tax. Now, in this climate, I know some people are wondering, what if my employer stopped contributing to the 401k plan? Should I stop contributing? No, because you still get the tax benefit of however much that you're contributing. You're lowering your tax liability for that tax calendar year. So though you may not be getting the contribution of your employee at this time, there are other benefits of the 401k, savings, investments, all that, that you still want to take advantage of. The primary reason of the 401k plan is the contribution of your employer. That's free money. Like if you're contributing 12, 10% of your money, let's say you contribute $6,000 and 6% of that is, if I can do it off my head, it might be six, no, I think it's a little less than 600. I think it might be a little closer to like 450, 475. That may not sound like much, but over a 30-year span, that's a lot of free money that you got from your employer that you wouldn't have had if you had not been contributing up to at least the contribution minimum for your employer to contribute. $475 over a 10-year span is a lot of money. That's $4,750 that you didn't have to put up yourself, not counting the compound interest of, let's say, a 10 to 12% return on whatever investments you have been invested in. That can easily add up, okay? One distinction is, though your contribution lowers your tax liability, the contribution of your employer does not lower your tax liability. You don't get a tax break just because your employer is adding money to your 401k. It doesn't work like that. Another benefit of the 401k is any money that is invested in the market, like any gains that you gain on your investment, such as interest, dividend, or capital gains, that will be taxed on withdrawals. Now, I know people say, so you're just delaying your tax. You're just tax deferring your taxation. Not necessarily, because here's the difference between working and retirement. With a 401k, you have access to withdrawals starting at 59 and a half. I don't recommend that, but that's based off the design of the vehicle. That's when you can start making withdrawals. I recommend you waiting to the 65, 67 retirement age, and that way it's a lot more simpler for a tax reason, and I'll tell you why. When you retire, you're not making the same amount of money you were when you were working. So, in theory, your expenses should also be lower as well. Let's say your house is paid off, your car is paid off, so all you're really paying is for medical, housing expenses like food and everything like that. So, your expenses are lower, so you're going to withdraw from your 401k less money than you would have working. So your taxation is going to be a lot lower. Let's say you were getting taxed at the 25% bracket, but because you're withdrawing less money because you can live off that money, live further on less, you're getting taxed at, let's say, the 15% tax bracket. That's a big difference between 25 and 15%. So that's why, though your taxation is delayed, you get the added benefit that is also lowered because you're not working like you used to and your expenses are a lot lower. So that's why I would recommend that you wait the full retirement age of 65 or 67 when you're fully retired, as opposed to start taking withdrawals or payments from your 401k at 59 and a half, because ours are at that age, you might still be working unless you've accumulated enough savings and wealth where you could retire early and you just want to start doing it then. Okay. So that's the basis of the 401k. The biggest takeaway before we move on to the next section is, the 401k was designed so you'll have a savings account, for one. It was also designed so that to be a stopgap between the Social Security insurance that you may receive. The long and short of it is, Social Security will not be, especially for millennials, will not be sufficient to cover your expenses. It's no way financially possible for you to live solely on your Social Security. Gone are the days where you can work 40 years, retire, and Social Security will still sustain you. Our grandparents and even our parents may get away with that, but we ourselves need to have as much saved in a variety of financial vehicles as possible, okay? Now I'm going to move on to the traditional IRA. The traditional IRA, which stands for Individual Retirement Account, most of you may not know, this is actually the most popular investment vehicle for people working. Because of various tax reasons and benefits that this account has, a number one difference between the 401k and the traditional IRA is the traditional IRA has more options of investments. Like with your company's 401k, a human resource department in line with some investment company put those investment options together. I've worked with enough corporate companies to know that they're generally targeted date, retirement date funds in there, which basically, let's say if it says that you'll retire at 35 and 2035, most people, they'll have a variety of target date accounts that are basically set up for that specific year and time. Then they'll give you some one or two, maybe three small growth companies. They'll give you two or three mid to large growth company. There'll be some real estate funds, there'll be some bond funds, and then it might be some international exposure. Altogether, it might be 12 or 15 funds in your company's specific offering. It's kind of limited because there are thousands and upon thousands of individual stocks as well as index funds available on the U.S. stock market alone. We're not even talking about international markets. So with a traditional IRA, you'll have a broader selection outside of what your company offers you to give you more diversification for one and more potential for exponential growth as well as compound interest on your investment vehicles, okay? Now, unlike the 401k, the max allowed each calendar year to put into your traditional IRA is $6,000. Okay, that's a little bit lower. And I'll get into, and that'll play into why I tell you to use multiple retirement investment vehicles. Okay, similar to the 401k, the money that you contribute to the traditional IRA is also pre-tax. Again, so you can put the money, so you can set it up with your employer. You know, some employers let you have multiple, say you get paid, they'll tell you how much you want to send to this account and that account. You can let the payroll or HR department know that you have an IRA and you would like pre-tax contributions to not only go from your 401k, but also to your IRA, okay? One of the major drawbacks of the traditional IRA is it has a salary cap, meaning that you are not allowed to make more than $65,000 annually as an individual. Otherwise, you will not get the tax deduction. And I know people, you know, a lot of people would like, make all that and all, so that doesn't apply to me. We have another vehicle for you for that. But for those who do qualify, you can't make more than $65,000 annually. So say you start off with a traditional IRA and you're making $50,000, but over a 5-year span, you get some raises or you change jobs and your income, you know, raises to $70,000, of course you're going to have to make some adjustments. So always keep in mind and always be mindful of keeping abreast of what the requirements are, not just tax-wise, but salary-wise for these vehicles. That way you don't run into tax problems later on down the line. This is why it's always very prudent to meet with your financial advisor or your certified financial planner one or two times a year, not necessarily one or two times a quarter, but one or two times a year, just to make sure that you're in line tax-wise as well as salary-wise for everything that you need to be doing for, to be able to use these vehicles effectively, okay? That's basically the difference between the 401k and traditional IRA. Now, the Roth IRA is where a lot more flexibility and benefits come into play. So let's get into that. One difference from the Roth IRA that's starkly different from the 401k and the traditional IRA is that the Roth IRA is what you use to invest after the contributions you use to protect, to invest, the money that you use is after tax money, meaning that you use the money that you actually get inside your check. The net that you take home will have to be the funding that you use to fund this IRA. Okay? Another thing is you get no tax break with the Roth IRA as you do with the 401k and the traditional IRA because you're putting in after tax money, okay? So there will be no tax credit. There will be no lowering of your tax liability because this is after tax money. A benefit that you don't have with the 401k and the traditional IRA is that in retirement with the Roth IRA, you make withdrawals from the Roth IRA completely tax-free. Ha, I probably got your attention with that, right? You make withdrawals completely tax-free. Mind you, remember, your contributions came from after-tax money. So you've already been taxed for the money that you actually used to invest in the Roth IRA. That's also why you don't get any tax credits or benefits every year for investing in your IRA. Adding to that, any capital gains, any interest, any dividends that you're paid in your Roth IRA is also tax-free. So think about it this way. The Roth IRA, you don't get the tax benefit up front. You get it on the back end. Okay? With the 401k and the traditional IRA, you get the tax benefit up front and you get a what I would consider a secondary tax benefit because though you get taxed on the withdrawals, because you're no longer, hopefully you're no longer working when you're in retirement, your tax liability should be lower because you're not making one as much as you were when you were working. And the withdrawal you're taking is probably lower than the salary that you were drawing when you were actually working. Another benefit of the Roth IRA is you're allowed to take some money out at any time without penalty. Again, the contrast to the 401k with your employer and the traditional IRA, you don't have that same benefit. Now, mind you, you can take out money from both the Roth, you can take out money both from the traditional IRA as well as the 401k, but one, you're going to have to pay a 10% tax penalty if you're not 59 and a half, so I definitely wouldn't recommend doing that. Plus, when you take a loan from your 401k, you have to pay that back. And if you don't pay it back in a certain time frame, you're going to be penalized as well. So the big benefit of the Roth IRA is that you can take out withdrawals of that money without penalty at no age requirement. Now, there is a restriction as to with that. It only refers to the money that you personally contributed. So let's say over a 10-year span, you've contributed $20,000 in your Roth IRA. And with interest, with compound interest, with dividends and, you know, capital gains, it's grown to $50,000. So you got $20,000 of initial investment from you and $30,000 in ROI, return on your investment. You can take up to $20,000 out with no penalty. That's all the money that you put in. But if you take out $20,001, you're going to have to pay a penalty. I'm not sure if it's 10% like the 401k and the traditional RA, but there will be a penalty because you're not 59 and a half. So you're going to have to pay penalty on the capital gains. Okay, I still think that's way better than the 401k and the traditional IRA, because you can take out basically the money that you've already put in, just not the capital gains that you've gained. Okay. Another benefit of the Roth IRA is, unlike traditional IRAs and the 401k, there's no required minimum of distribution. Now, with the 401k and the Roth IRA, you can start drawing on those at 59 and a half, okay? Actually, I should include Social Security insurance as well, because you can also start drawing on that at 59 and a half. However, if you don't, let's say that you've saved up enough personal funding, you don't want to draw on the Social Security, you can actually live off your own savings for a good while. When you turn 70 and a half, I don't know why they picked that age, but that's what they picked, 70 and a half, you have to start taking a minimum requirement contribution from Social Security, 401k, and the traditional IRA. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. With a Roth IRA, there is no minimum age that you need to start requiring. I mean, start drawing on contribution. Let's say, again, that you have enough savings or you've maneuvered your financial life in a way where you don't need to start drawing on anything, or just maybe you'll just draw on the 401k. You don't need to touch the IRA. If you decide to go to 75 or 80 before you touch it, that's perfectly fine. There is no consequence for you in that regard. That is one of the great benefits of the Roth IRA. It doesn't require you to take money, even if you're one, don't need it and are not ready. That is, nobody likes to take money out of a financial vehicle that's actually making them money ahead of time than they actually need it. A drawback of the 401k and the traditional IRA, you could be in a situation, let's say, kind of like we're in right now. There's a pandemic going on. And because you are legally bound by the mechanism set up in the 401k and the Roth IRA, the 401k and the traditional IRA, you may be forced to sell some holdings or bonds just to meet the minimum distribution requirement of the 401k and the traditional IRA, and you may sell them at a loss. For years, you might have been up on these two vehicles, but because now is the time of year that you have to take your yearly contribution or withdrawal, now you have to sell these, you know, these holdings at a loss. Nobody wants to be in that predicament, okay? The Roth IRA is also very beneficial in estate planning, and let me tell you what I mean about that. Let's say that your 401k or your traditional IRA is sufficient enough that you live in retirement in conjunction with Social Security, if it's still around, that you don't need to draw on your your Roth IRA. That it stays exactly how it is. It continues to compound, continue to gain interest, continue to get capital gains. When you pass away, that's a part of your estate. this is why estate planning is very, very, very important. You always want a will or a trust that states where everything goes and who gets it. Your Roth IRA can pass to your heirs with no problem. They also get the same tax benefit that you would have gotten. And by that, I mean they would have to pay no death tax or income tax on your Roth IRA because, one, the money that you contributed was after tax, and two, the mechanism set up in the Roth IRA, capital gains, interest, and dividends don't get taxed as well. On the flip side of that, if you leave your 401k and your traditional IRA to your heirs, you will trigger a tax liability to them. That's very important when you're setting up, you know, which ones you're going to use for what, because financial literacy, as we all know, and the reason I started this podcast, is not widespread within the culture. So imagine a loved one, a child, a spouse who's already grieving your loss. They're not going to want to deal with the tax implications of, you know, 401ks and traditional IRAs. And it, to be honest, when you're dealing with that type of emotional loss and trauma, it could be easily forgotten. The benefit of making sure that the IRA is actually the financial vehicle that gets passed on to them is they wouldn't have to worry about any tax implications. It would be those funds and those assets within that vehicle would can be completely sold off and given to them for a profitable benefit without having to worry about any tax implications. So when you're setting up how you're going to use certain things and what's going to be left and passed on, taxation should always be a part of the plan. So a big benefit of the Roth IRA over the other two is that it can be easily passed from your estate to your heirs or whoever your beneficiary is without any tax implication, okay? Now, another big point when it comes to which one should you use. When it comes to the Roth IRA, I would recommend that you use it for high growth capital gain assets such as stocks, mutual funds, and ETFs. The reason being, again, it comes back to the taxing on it. Everything that you gain in the Roth IRA is tax exempt because the money that you input into it came after tax, and the capital gains, the interest, and the dividends all come with tax exemptions. When it comes to your 401k and your traditional IRA, I recommend holding things like bonds and treasuries in there because, one, they're low return investment vehicles, and being as though in retirement, again, we want to utilize the tax benefit of you not working. So we want to get you as low as a marginal tax as possible. Having the bonds and the treasuries and your 401ks and your traditional IRAs gives you the benefit of getting a lower tax liability than it would putting those instruments, putting the bonds and the treasuries in the Roth IRA and putting your stocks, mutual funds, and ETFs and your traditional 401k and your traditional IRA, but that increases your tax liability because now you have to pay on not only the pre-tax money that you put in for all the years of you working, you also have to pay taxes on the capital gains, the dividends, and the interest that you've gained over the years at a tax rate that may be a little bit higher. And again, remember what I said before about the minimum withdrawal contributions, depending on the time or the state of the economy. You don't want to get caught where you're selling your assets for a loss, but then your tax liability makes it higher. Okay? So that pretty much covers all the three vehicles when it comes to the Roth 401k that is an employee-based savings account that comes with the benefit of most employers will make free contributions up to 6%, some maybe more, and you don't want to miss out on that free money, okay? If you happen to be, now the difference is if you have an employer who doesn't do contributions and it's just they're never going to, it really doesn't matter if you use the the traditional IRA or the 401k. Either one would work. I just would like you to have either one, either the 401k. 401k is my first choice if your employer is going to match you. If there is no employer match and there's no likelihood in the future that there will be, I recommend you either use the still the 401k anyway for the tax benefit of lowering your tax burden, or get a traditional IRA for the same reasons, and gives you a little bit more flexibility, because remember the traditional IRA has a wider variety of investment vehicles. You'll get a lot of more choices for ETFs, mutual funds, and definitely there will be individual stocks. That's one thing I didn't touch on with the 401k. With the 401k, there will be no individual stocks that you will invest in. Companies tend to have only funds, index funds, real estate funds, some mutual funds. They never have individual stocks. Traditional IRAs gives you the options for funds, indexes, as well as individual stocks. So that also can play into account of what you want to do. Maybe you'll say like Jamal, my company does match, but I feel like maybe the offerings that they have with those funds, I can do better picking my own funds. Plus, I want to get some individual stocks to kind of, you know, diversify my investment portfolio. I'm totally fine with that. I am completely fine with that. My issue is that you should have some mechanism or some vehicle that you're stashing away money, at least $3,000-$4,000 a year, in one of these vehicles. That way that you're getting, one, the tax benefit, and two, you're preparing for retirement. And just a couple of notes before we wrap up. I understand people are going to be like, I don't have a lot of money, or, you know, these options and all that. I would ask that you would just make the sacrifice. Let's take an example. Say you think you don't have enough money, but I'm sure at least you take one vacation a year, right? I see it all the time on social media, especially the millennial generation. You take one vacation a year. Some of you taking two and threes. I don't know how you got the time off. I need to get the PTO that y'all have. But you're taking two and three vacations a year. Sacrifice for me just one of those luxury vacations. Let's say the plane tickets ran you $500 or $600 because you're going to these islands. It might be more. Let's say the all-inclusive resort ran you another $500-$600. So now we're up to $1,200, $1,300. And don't forget the outfits, especially with the ladies. You know you got to get three and four bathing suits, even if you don't wear them all. You got to get your multiple wigs and all that. So altogether, say this entire vacation cost you $2,000, $2,500, right? I would ask that you would sacrifice the money that you saved or whatever for that vacation. Toss it into a traditional IRA. Toss it into your 401k. Toss it into a Roth IRA. And if you did nothing else that year, or even, I'll do you one better. If you do nothing else as long as you work, you toss it in that one year and you don't touch it again, I would be good with that. I don't recommend, because you could always do more. You could always do better adding to it and getting more because the more money you have working for you, the better you'll be off in a financial situation later on in your life. But if you did that minimum for me, and not even for me, because I'm getting no benefit from that, but if you did that minimum for yourself and for, you know, your better living. And potentially, if you do that and there's money left over for when you pass on to the next life, and your heirs get $20,000-$30,000 in addition to any life insurance policy you might have had, I think that is a good life. That's the way that you should live. I want us to stop living hand to mouth or paycheck to paycheck. And that's why it's so important to me that the information that's available to us, that I bring it to you, but I make it as simple as possible, so you have no excuse and no recourse to say that you didn't know and you don't understand, because my DMs are always open. The comment sections of wherever you're listening to this podcast, whether it be Anchor or podcasts on iPhones or Spotify, gives you the mechanism to comment and say, I need further explanation, or can you help, or can we go into further detail? Okay? So with all that being said, I hope all of this information was useful for you. I hope I made it a little bit easier for you to understand. I hope if you've been putting off investing in your 401k plan, or if you've been investing in your 401k plan, but you didn't know what you were really investing in, and now you're going to take a look and kind of adjust your contributions, your percentage, and move some things around and invest not just in the target dates, but throw some money in the index funds or the bonds or the real estate. Or if you got some extra money this year, or you want to cancel that vacation and you're going to look up that Roth IRA, the traditional IRA, that makes me very happy. But before you do all of that, I want to make sure that you guys use all the vehicles available to you. Look up and see if your bank has a FA that you can have a conversation with, a CFP, a certified financial planner. They are very useful. Use them to help you set up your financial structure, game plan, set up your goals. Don't have goals that aren't tangible. Don't just say, oh, I want to live well in retirement. What does that look like for you? You need to have a hard number. You need to have specifics. You need to know if you want to live with your house or your mortgage paid off and just live all, you know, this fund is going to finance your eating, your medical, or maybe you'll sell the house or rent it out as a investment property. Whatever your desires are, make them tangible, make them simple, make them plain, have it structured, sit down with a professional and lay it all out. I appreciate you guys listening. I look forward to these recordings every week. Like, I was excited when I was preparing to bring this to y'all. So please listen, give me your feedback. I'm not sure what next week's episode is going to be. I'm going to post some things on Twitter and Instagram to get some feedback from you guys and see what I come up with. I am in preparation to bring on the first couple of guests within the next three or four weeks. I think I'm going to start with some entrepreneurs in different venues, because it's not just about financial literacy being about saving and investing. It's all about also increasing your income, whether that be through business operations or side hustles. I want to give you the real life, uncut grit and grind that's happening out here in the culture, and I'm working hard for y'all. So it's been great. I'll talk to you guys soon.